Young children usually have very little sense of self-control. They should be taken away from here. Otherwise, they'll be playing. I know that everyone loves children playing, but there's a time and a place for everything. And children playing is not in the midst of serious discussion. Yeah, let the women take them. Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15, text 16. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Dvavimau purushau loke ksharath chakshara evacha. Kshara sarvani bhutani kutas to kshara uchate. There are two classes of beings, the fallible and the infallible. In the material world, every living entity is fallible, and in the spiritual world, every living entity is called infallible. Yeah. Purport. As already explained, the Lord in His incarnation as Vyasadeva compiled the Vedanta Sutra. Sutra, this is an old edition, I think. Published some time ago. Nowadays they put sutras. Yeah, and this says 2015. Still they're writing sutra. It should be sutras. There's not one sutra. There are many sutras. Here the Lord is giving in summary the contents of the Vedanta sutras. He says that the living entities, who are innumerable, can be divided into two classes, the fallible and the infallible. The living entities are eternally separated parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When they are in contact with the material world, they are called Jiva Bhuta. And the Sanskrit words given here, Kshara Saravani Bhutani, mean that they are fallible. Those who are in oneness with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, are called infallible. Oneness does not mean that they have no individuality, but that there is no disunity. They are all agreeable to the purpose of the creation. Of course, in the spiritual world, there is no such thing as creation, but since the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated in the Vedanta Sutras, is the source of all emanations, that conception is explained. According to the statement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, there are two classes of living entities. The Vedas give evidence of this, so there is no doubt about it. The living entities who are struggling in this world with the mind and five senses have their material bodies, which are changing. As long as a living entity is conditioned, the body changes due to contact with matter. Matter is changing, so the living entity appears to be changing. But in the spiritual world, the body is not made of matter, therefore there is no change. In the material world, the living entity undergoes six changes: birth, growth, duration, reproduction, then dwindling and vanishing. These are the changes of the material body. But in the spiritual world, the body does not change. There is no old age, there is no birth, there is no death. There all exists in oneness. Kshara sarvani bhutani. Any living entity who has come in contact with matter, beginning from the first created being, Brahma, down to a small ant, is changing its body. Therefore, they are all fallible. In the spiritual world, however, they are always liberated in oneness. Dvavimau purushau loke ksharas chakshara evacha. Kshara sarvani bhutani kutas to kshara uchati. There are two classes of beings, the fallible and the infallible. In the material world, every living entity is fallible, and in the spiritual world, every living entity is called infallible. Prior to this, Lord Krishna has already established that this material world is miserable, It's the whole condition of the material world is summarized in two words, dukhalayam ashashvatam. This world is miserable and everything here is temporary. Misery, there are four kinds of misery which no one can deny or avoid. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha, birth, death, old age and disease, they are all miserable. However, Lord Krishna gives us information also of the spiritual world. Parastasmatu bhavo neo vyakto vyaktat sanatanaha yah sasaraveshu bhuteshu nashyatsu navinashyati. Having described that this material world, bhutva bhutva praliyate, it is created and destroyed again and again, Lord Krishna says that beyond this material world, there is a spiritual world, the spiritual world, and that when everything in this world is destroyed, that world remains as it is. Lord Krishna gives some indication of the spiritual world in the Bhagavad Gita. In this chapter also, Lord Krishna opens, or this chapter, of course, Krishna didn't say when he was speaking Bhagavad Gita, now I'm going to speak the 15th chapter, but it's divided pretty cleanly subject-wise by Vyasadeva. And at the beginning of the 15th chapter, Lord Krishna speaks about the need, about the spiritual world and about the need to go from this material world to the spiritual world. Of course, that's also been discussed in the 8th chapter. So the spiritual world, Lord Krishna gives some indication. In this chapter, natad bhas ayate suryo nasha shanko na pavakaha yadgatvana nivartante tad dhamma paramam mama. The spiritual world is Krishna's supreme abode, where there's no need of any material elements. There's no need of any sun, moon, electricity. Srila Prabhupada translates. We think electricity is a recently discovered phenomenon, but those who have knowledge from Krishna via the Vedas, they have full knowledge of everything that's required in this world. So, anyway, Krishna is pointing to the spiritual world and more in this Bhagavad Gita. Don't stay here in this disgusting place. Go to the spiritual world. More information of the spiritual world is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in other Puranas. That is a very relishable place. As I just said, this material world is disgusting. We might think, well, how is it disgusting? It might be if you're, you might think like that if you're a Yazidi in Syria, but if one is living comfortable middle-class life in India with servants and hamdo hamare do situation, typical Indian family, with nice silk clothes for the wife, silk saris and bangles, and nice food to eat, and live a very pious life, vegetarian, and behave very nicely, respect parents and don't hate anyone, very civilized life, we may think, well, how is it disgusting? Yes, it's disgusting. Even the pious, well-behaved life, it binds us in this material world. Binds us to birth, death, old age, and disease. However nicely we may perform yoga or aerobics, this hall in which we're sitting is not always used for discussing topics of Bhagavad Gita. It's also used for what goes on in the name of yoga, exercises, aerobics to make the body healthy. But the body is by nature disgusting, and it's only an outward covering of skin, which we think looks nice. Covering means it covers blood, bones, pus, and all kinds of other disgusting things. Of course, you may think, well, what's disgusting? But the fact that we are bound to this body is disgusting. So we should go to the spiritual world. We're not overly concerned with this material world. We're not concerned with the Yazidis in Syria, how to help them. Yes, we're concerned. We're concerned with everyone. It's not only the Yazidis in Syria who are suffering. Of course, a short time ago, hardly anyone had ever heard of them, but they came to prominence in the world news due to being chased, persecuted by the so-called Islamic State, otherwise known as Daesh. But everyone is suffering. If you're not chased and tortured and persecuted by these very nasty people, whose nastiness is all the more ironic in as much as it's done in the name of God. If we're not chased by them, we're chased by death. Anyway, we have to die. So this material world is not a very good place. We should go to the spiritual world. We're not very much concerned with this world. How can we help the Yazidis? Well, first we should think how to help ourselves in the best possible way. That might sound selfish, but we're all in the same situation. Birth, death, old age, and disease. Some feel it more extremely, some less so. But we're all suffering in this world. We should know how to help others. What is the best way to overcome the religious fanaticism that thinks that killing others is a pious act? Of course, we also say it can be under certain circumstances. That's the whole message of the Bhagavad Gita. But we should know what those circumstances are, not whimsically or due to a wrong understanding of religion, killing others. So that's the point, right understanding. We should come to the right point. We should understand properly, which is why Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita, because Arjuna was bewildered. And Krishna directs Arjuna to act in this world in a manner that we can get out of this world and go to the spiritual world. Our focus is on the spiritual world. We don't want to stay here. That's the first thing that we should understand to enter into actual spiritual life. That we don't belong here. We don't want to stay here. Of course, pretty much all religions will say that, or all religious interpretations. But most religions, their idea is that we will go to heaven or whatever, and heaven will be like this world, the best of this world. We'll live there eternally, and we'll have our silk saris and all that kind of thing. Their idea is that we shall live happily there. But Krishna directs us to a completely different understanding. That the spiritual world is the place where people don't bang doors and open them and close them and cause a disturbance all the time, among other things. Of course, there are many more favorable features of the spiritual world. There are no material miseries. No material miseries. Why? Because there is a completely different consciousness. The consciousness there is not one of trying to enjoy oneself, but the consciousness is one of how Krishna will be satisfied. Most people think this heaven or the spiritual world, whatever their concept is, that it'll be all we want in the material world. We'll have everyone will be nice and live together, and there'll be no disturbances from creaking doors or doctors or taxes or police. Anyway, no one's a criminal. Everyone lives very happily together. Well, I was trying to give a hint. Maybe I'll just say it directly now. Could we stop this disturbance? If the door has to open and close, maybe little oil works wonders. Little oil on the hinges and the whole problem is solved. So the spiritual world is the place where everyone is certainly happy. Otherwise, why should we even bother with it at all? Everyone is happy. There are no material miseries. Certainly there's no tax department. There's no old age. There's no disease. The food is very nice. There's no indigestion. But we, in the spiritual world, we are to serve Krishna. That is the point. It's not for our own enjoyment. The happiness there derives not from our own enjoyment, but from Krishna's enjoyment. The very cause of our incarceration in this mature world is the desire to enjoy ourselves separately from Krishna. And so it's a completely different kind of attitude. Everything is there. People are there. Animals are there, families are there, the land is there, maybe not factories or oil rigs, or oil wells, not pollution, not excessive heat or cold, but basically everything is the same as here, because this material world is a perverse reflection of the spiritual world. So Krishna teaches us to be otherworldly, to not be overly concerned with this world. Now, Arjuna was thinking that, why should let me withdraw from the world? But Krishna teaches to live in the world in a way that we can come out from this world. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's example is one of complete absorption in Krishna. And that is the ultimate message of Bhagavad Gita. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskaru. Krishna tells Arjuna, always think of me, become my devotee, bow down, worship me. So we're concerned with Krishna, which means in the spiritual world, in this material world, everything is fallible. Fallible means that we make mistakes, that we have to die. We're in an impermanent situation. In the spiritual world, there's no death. There's no transformation. We don't suffer deterioration. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching takes the teaching of Bhagavad Gita to always, Krishna says to always think of me, takes that to the fullest extent of being always completely absorbed in Krishna to the extent that he appeared to be like a madman. This is actually the instruction of Srimad Bhagavatam, that the highest perfection is to be as if mad from the perspective of materialistic people. Evam rata sapriya nama kirtya jata anuraga dutta chitta uchai hasatiti rodati hasatiti gayati rodati roti unmadava nrityati lokabhayaha. One who is completely absorbed in Krishna thought, is absorbed in chanting the names of Krishna, dancing, singing, laughing, crying, shouting out loudly those holy names, like a madman, but he doesn't care. He doesn't care that others criticize him. So that's complete absorption in Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed that by his example. There are narrations in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita of how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would fall, he would jump in the air in ecstasy, chanting in kirtan, and come crashing down to the ground, but he wouldn't feel any pain. He was so absorbed in Krishna thought. While crossing the river Yamuna, he was in such ecstasy, thinking, this is Krishna's pastime river. You jump in the river without thinking that he could drown. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's not going to drown, but just completely absorbed. One time also, seeing the sea in Puri, he thought it was the Yamuna, jumped in the river and lost in thought of Krishna. He was the supreme controller. He lost his own mind in the feeling of love for Krishna. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed by his own ecstasy to be completely absorbed in thought of the spiritual, Krishna, the spiritual nature, the spiritual world, the supreme spiritual person who is Krishna. But at the same time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers have taught us to not be neglectful of worldly affairs. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a sannyasi, so he didn't get involved in worldly affairs. In fact, when his followers came to him for help in worldly affairs, he protested. There was an occasion where one of his close followers was about to be executed by the prince of the state because that Gopinath Pattanayaka was implicated in some corruption case, even though he was a great devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was going to be executed. So the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they came to him and said, the only way he can be saved is if you say something, because the king has great regard for you, and if you just give the word, he will release your devotee. After all, he's your devotee, so you should save him. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was upset. He said, why are you involving me in these worldly affairs? if they may be my disciples or devotees, but if they misbehave, then the king has got all right to do what he's doing. And why do you want to involve me in this? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he did not want to get involved in this. Just simply absorption in Krishna. Because it's a fact that if you involve in worldly affairs, then one thing after another, there's no end to it. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to be completely aloof. But that's not for everyone. Just as he said, in this case, the king, he has the right to do whatever's required to administer justice in the state. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wasn't saying that everyone should just forfeit all responsibilities. He knew that the king has all right to, a pious king has the right to punish others. Of course, that punishment might seem a bit extreme, and eventually the king did stop the execution, which was actually ordered by one of his sons. The king was more intelligent than his son, and immediately said, "Well, if the aim is to retrieve the money that's lost through corruption of the, then if you kill him, you're never going to get it back. So better keep him alive, and at least you can get something back." So that's a worldly consideration. The king, Prataparudra, he was also a great devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't tell him that you just give up your kingdom and become a sannyasi like me. In fact, Maharaj Prataparudra would probably have quite welcomed that. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew that not everyone is ready for that. Some people may be very renounced, but some people have to live in this world, work in this world. In fact, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is living in Puri. He could be completely absorbed in love of Krishna without the persecution or the possibility of persecution, which was always there when he was in Bengal, which was under Muslim rule at the time. Whereas Prataparudra was one of the few kings in India at that time who was an independent Hindu king. So different strokes for different folks. The aim is to go back home, back to Godhead, to the spiritual world. And for that, we should be completely absorbed in Krishna thought. But not everyone is ready for or fit for complete renunciation. Those who are, they may do so. In some cases, maybe not also. We find in the Bhagavatam, 5th canto, please study all these books. It's a... Srila Prabhupada's books are a vast storehouse of knowledge, which gives us knowledge not only of the spiritual world, but how to live in this material world so we can go there. So it's very valuable instruction, even for living in this world, which isn't our it's not our aim to live in this world. Let's get out of this world. So in the beginning of the 5th canto of Bhagavatam, we find that there was a renounced brahmachari, Priyavrata, who was quite happy as a brahmachari. His mind and senses were not disturbed. But his father, Manu, wished to retire, and he wished to give the responsibility of the kingdom to his son. But Priyavrata didn't want to. He said, I'm absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Well, I don't want to go back to that Maya. And Narad, who was Priyavrata's guru, he agreed. So eventually Lord Brahma, who's the father of both Manu and Narada, came and said, hey, you go. Go back and rule the kingdom, which means he had to get married. So he took that responsibility and ultimately, he, even though not living his whole life as a brahmachari, again came in his twilight of his life, in his old age, he again came to the position of renunciation in Krishna consciousness, full absorption in Krishna. And while he was ruling, he was also ruling in accord with Krishna's plan. It was not that he forgot Krishna, although the life of a king is not as conducive, intrinsically it's not as conducive for conducting or for being Krishna conscious as is the life of a brahmachari. The point is everyone should be Krishna conscious. Krishna consciousness means to be absorbed in thought of Krishna, preparing ourselves to go to the spiritual world. It can be done in family life also. Although intrinsically, renounced life is a better situation for being Krishna conscious, because one is not disturbed by so many materialistic thoughts, how to bring money, how to maintain the family and the apartment, and how to deal with neighbors, and one has to work so much time, so much attention has to go into so much attention has to be directed into performing a job or running a business or whatever. So intrinsically the renounced situation is better for cultivating Krishna consciousness, because one renounces activities such as working, looking after a family, just so one can concentrate fully on Krishna service and Krishna thought. However, in any situation, one can cultivate Krishna consciousness. And in every situation, one should cultivate Krishna consciousness. By hearing the descriptions of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, we should desire to come to that position beyond birth and death. There is one book which is made from lectures of Srila Prabhupada, edited lectures, called Beyond Birth and Death. Very good title. What do you think? It's a very thought-provoking title. Mostly people, they never think of such things. What is that situation beyond birth and death? Of course, many people don't even know of or don't believe in the understanding that there is repeated birth and death. But at least those who are from a Hindu background, Hindus, to put it simply, Hindus, as also religious processes that grew out of Vedic culture, that means Buddhism, Jainism, Sikhism, they all accept that there is repeated birth and death. Isn't it, all of you, before you came to, I presume everyone here except myself was born into a Hindu family, is that right? Anyone not from a Hindu family? Yeah, no, everyone is. So before you came to this Krishna consciousness, did you believe in or have at least some idea of that this is one life, and before this I was born somewhere else, and after this I'll get born again? You all accept that, isn't it? Maybe with not very... I presume after coming here and taking lessons in Bhagavad Gita as it is, you have a much better idea of what that is and how it works. Is that also true? Yeah. But basically, every Hindu believes, even though they may not understand it very well, there is birth after birth, and I'm in my present situation due to what I did in a previous life. Is it not? And bad things happen because we did something bad, and good thing happens like that. Even I think the Indian Muslims, even though they don't fully believe in it, they have some idea that they use that word kismat, Urdu word. I'm not sure, but maybe you could tell me better. But I think in that is, well, the idea is what God has given us. That's the idea, what God has deigned for us. So everyone knows, but who is thinking of going beyond birth and death? Even most Hindus, they know that, well, the ultimate aim is moksha, but they're not very serious about it. They don't think very much beyond birth and death. Buddhists also. For some time I lived in Thailand. I was in and out. I even spoke Thai. Pasat Thai. I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing it properly now. It's a bit difficult to pronounce because it's a tonal language, so I can't remember the tone. Anyway, Pasat Thai. Pasat is from Sanskrit, Bhasha. So I asked one Thai woman once, you see, all you people, you eat pigs, Buddhists there. Great majority of them, they like to eat all kinds of meat, but they're, well, maybe not cows, but that's probably changing now due to the ongoing effect of Kali Yuga. So I asked her that their favorite is pork. I think in this country, pork is not sold at all. That's their. So I told her that. Well, I asked her, don't you know that you'll become a pig in your next life? And she said, well, that will also be fun. That's the idea. Be happy. Just be happy in this world. Whatever situation you get, be happy. Sanuk. That's a word in Thai. It means pleasure. It's the most important word in the Thai language. Not in every language. In some languages, money is the most important word. In fact, I heard one sannyasi, not an ISKCON sannyasi, who goes to America also and preaches, had said that Indians are more attached to money than Americans are to sex. I don't know if you can follow that. Americans are just absorbed in sex. So he's an Indian Swami who said that. So that was his observation. Indians are more attached to money than Americans are to sex. It's stating that is neither a compliment for Indians or for Americans. It may be true. It's a general statement. So this idea that we shall enjoy in this world, Americans by sex, of course this is a gross simplification and generalization, Indians by money, and Thais by just enjoy life, sex, eating nice food and giggling, nothing, not taking anything very seriously, not that much concerned about money, but actually in one sense they're more intelligent. You can eat and have sex without working hard. So why work hard? In that sense they're more intelligent. They're more expert at enjoying this material world. But those who do understand that there is repeated birth should understand that it's miserable and we should go beyond birth and death. Who will teach this? Well, the great acharyas, they teach this. In 2 days' time is the anniversary of Srila Prabhupada's arrival in America. He came to teach this. What a task to teach that when people, they didn't even know there is any, there is such a thing as birth and death. Most people. I didn't, when I was a child, I never had any such idea. No one ever told me. Eventually, must have been my early teens, where I don't remember first when I first came in contact with the concept. I remember in school studying during the English literature class Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, one drama by Shakespeare, in which it mentions, which Shakespeare, the great bard, mentioned one of the characters in this drama. It's all fictitious, of course. State something about not killing a partridge. A partridge is a kind of bird that some people kill to eat. So you wouldn't be careful, don't kill a partridge, it might be your grandmother. And then there was a footnote to explain that this refers to the concept of reincarnation. Or if you want to use a fancy word, metempsychosis. So interestingly, even though the church, the Christian church, had attempted to stamp out any understanding of reincarnation, which was there in the culture in Europe prior to the Christians coming and converting everyone to Christianity, mostly by force, actually. A lot of it was by force. Or for political reasons or whatever. But still that idea remained in Shakespeare, and presumably his audience, they also understood it. What the joke is, it seems to be a joke, but they understood it also. They understood what the joke is, that it's based on the concept of reincarnation. So no one has a very clear idea about this, even the Hindus, and even though there is some idea, you get moksha, but yeah, okay, but not right now. Not right now. So Srila Prabhupada came to give this knowledge. First of all, to understand, Hindus, they know, but they don't care. Okay, you get born again? Okay. But Krishna says, not okay. Don't be a fool. But in the Western world, as Srila Prabhupada said, is an extremely foolish civilization. Because they don't even know that there is repeated birth and death. They don't even know about it. They have such big educational institutions, hundreds of thousands of students, university students in America. But they're all foolish, in as much as, it's not only them, but everyone's foolish. You'd think they'd be more intelligent. I was recently at a program with students in America, and I told them that this whole civilization is completely it's completely off, because you don't know. The goal of life is not self-realization, it's just sense gratification. They didn't appreciate that. They thought, well, America, come on. America's great. It's wonderful. But actually, the goal of life is sense gratification. Therefore, you see all the young girls walking around with shorts on, which is uncivilized. I didn't say that. If I'd have said that, they might have killed me. They almost killed me anyway. Well, not verbally. They were not very happy. Srila Prabhupada came to give a message which is meant for making people happy, but initially you can expect that they might become very unhappy. First of all, who are you? Who are you, Indian? You're Indian, backward people, ignorant. It's we who gave you all the technology. We are... What will Indians teach us? They don't want to listen. We're happy. We have all our material facilities. But actually they're not happy. That's why there's so many hippies. Srila Prabhupada is preaching among the hippies mostly. His aim wasn't to preach among the hippies. He wanted to preach among the more respectable class of people. But the hippies took interest. Why? Because they thought that America, our country, for all its money and guns and bombs and technology, we're not satisfied. We want something else. So they went, they took up what they called an alternative lifestyle. But due to lack of knowledge or lack of sincerity, whatever, they ended up anyway with sense gratification. So is hippie life means the main things are free sex, illegal psychotropic drugs, long hair for men, which at that time was considered something, bright clothes, wearing bells, music, different kind of music, music for sense gratification, and intertwined with that some kind of spirituality. It's a funny mixture, free sex and spirituality. At least in India, up to the present day, mostly people understand that spirituality and free sex, they don't go together. Therefore, this Ashram Bapa was maligned. This Paramahamsa Nityananda, I don't know if you follow all these things, but he was a big Swami. But he lost his reputation. That Osho was there in Pune, but the local people had a very bad impression of him. But in America, you can get away with it. You can be spiritual and have free sex also, somehow or other, because they have no culture. So Srila Prabhupada came to teach this message, an impossible message, practically, to teach them to give up illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meat eating, and chant Hare Krishna. But Srila Prabhupada was able to do that. In the beginning, Indians weren't joining this movement. I first went to India in 1975, and that was just to visit the Mayapur Vrindavan festival. And then in 1976, I went there with the intention of staying, which I have done more or less and up to the present time, based in India, although for some years I was based in Bangladesh and Thailand and Malaysia and Burma, which is all those areas are influenced by Indian culture, no doubt. So when I first came to India, it was very difficult to preach Krishna consciousness. There's a very strong influence of Advaitavad. It's still there. I think many of you here are from Kerala. The influence of Shankaracharya is very strong there, but it's very strong all over India and all over the world. People don't know. how influential he is. With the understanding that, or the misunderstanding, that everything is all one. He also taught to go beyond birth and death. But his idea was that we merge into the oneness. Of course, Shankara, he was ultimately a great devotee of Krishna, because he's Lord Shiva. But that's not well known. So it was very difficult to preach Krishna consciousness in those days. People didn't trust us. There was propaganda that we were CIA agents. Although it's very difficult to imagine a CIA agent who's a vegetarian and doesn't drink and doesn't have sex. It was a foolish accusation, but many people believed that. And in general, there wasn't much interest in spiritual life because Pandit Nehru had propagated the idea. He was one among many, but he was very influential in propagating the idea that what India needs now is factories and dams and power stations. It's too much religion has made India backward. That was his idea. So Srila Prabhupada's movement has certainly had a great effect in bringing Indian people's attention back to the world beyond birth and death, to the spiritual world, with Krishna. It's had a great effect in promoting Krishna consciousness. At the same time, gross materialism is getting grosser and grosser in India, so that at least in the major cities, it's not uncommon for... There was this infamous rape case over a year ago now. The girl was out at night, midnight, drinking, partying. That's become normal, which was unthinkable previously. So it's a great task to direct people's attention back home, back to Godhead, beyond birth and death, to Krishna in the spiritual world. So as we're remembering Srila Prabhupada's arrival in America, we can also remember the great effect that had in India eventually, because in the beginning people thought, well, these Hare Krishna people, they're just hippies, because there were so many hippies used to come to India, and they'd go to Rishikesh and sit with the sadhus and smoke ganja through the chillum, dam mare dam. There was that song also, Hare Krishna Hare Ram. So people didn't trust, but after some time they thought, oh, these people are serious, they're real, and they took note. And Prabhupada had that intention, because he was preaching before Krishna consciousness in India before he went to the West, but no one was taking it very seriously. They were all enamored by the idea that we have to develop like the West. We've had too much religion, now we need factories and dams and motor cars and all these things. So Srila Prabhupada, seeing that people in India were enamored by the West, he thought, okay, let me go to the West and then we can preach there, bring the Western devotees, and then the Indian people will take it seriously. Aping the West. So if the Western, some Western people at least do something right, then Indian people, they may follow that. And it was a good policy, and actually it's been successful. And actually our movement, which in the 1960s and 70s was most prominent in America, is now most prominent in India. But still not as prominent as it should be. People get the human form of life, they're born, they die, and most people don't know anything about Krishna consciousness. Even most Hindus. In the educated Hindus in well, all over the world, they mostly, most of them know ISKCON. They've heard of ISKCON. They have some idea about ISKCON. But there are still many people in the villages who have no idea. They never heard of it. Is it not? Of course, in Kerala, you don't really have villages like in other places. It's just there's one house here, another house there, and the whole state goes like that. But if you go in the rural areas, there are many people, they never heard of it. There's huge area, North India, South India. Mostly people, they never heard of our Krishna Conscious Movement. Or even if they do, they just think, oh, they have very nice temples. And that's about it. They go to Vrindavan or Mayapur or Bombay and see our temple and say, oh, very nice temple. They're impressed. But they don't know what is the need to come out of this material world and go to the spiritual world. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada emphasized very much, he wrote these books, taking much trouble, actually. Srila Prabhupada could have just slept at night, but he didn't. He would get up in the night and translate these books. Why did he do it at night? Because he was so busy in the day, he didn't have time. So he didn't sleep. Very little, 2 hours he would sleep at night, and he would take a nap in the day. So he worked very hard to produce these books, just to give people the knowledge that we don't belong in this material world, we should go beyond birth and death. And he very much wanted these books to be distributed. So see what you can do. You're very fortunate. We're all very fortunate that we got this knowledge. What is the base of this Krishna Conscious Movement? There could be various answers to that question, but one very solid answer is knowledge. The knowledge given in Srila Prabhupada's books. Whatever we're doing in this Krishna Conscious Movement is all based on the knowledge that he gave. And Srila Prabhupada was always giving knowledge. That is the prime function of a guru, is to give knowledge, to teach. Srila Prabhupada, during the day, he would give lectures, he would individually speak with devotees. The conversations of Srila Prabhupada, many of them are recorded. You can hear, you can read the transcripts. It's mostly Srila Prabhupada in individual conversations was speaking the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And at night he would dictate these books. He was very serious about giving this knowledge. So we're all fortunate here that we have this knowledge. So try to share it. We may, first of all, we should imbibe it by studying Srila Prabhupada's books. Of course, many people here, and in India more so than in the West, they have very long work hours, so they may not get much time for studying, but do whatever you can, or you can listen. These books are available as audio books also. You can hear while working or going to work or whatever. And try to share this knowledge with others. There are programs for sponsoring books. You can sponsor books for India, for instance, for the school that you attended. You could give a set of books for the library. You could give books to be given as prizes to children in the school. You can give to your friends and family. Diwali is coming up. That's more in North India, not so much in South India. But Diwali, then there's in Kerala, there's that Onam, is it? So you give gifts. So you can give Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. You can, anyway, you're expected to give some gift, isn't it? Especially if you're working in the Gulf. You're expected to be like some, like you see Dhanalakshmi, the picture is there with the money coming out of the hand. So people think if you're in the Gulf, you're a walking Dhanalakshmi. You can just give them so much money. So there's something. I mean, that's why you're here, isn't it? Otherwise, I don't think any of you are here because you love the heat and the sand and the oil. I don't think so. You're here because of vitamin M, as it's called. The thing that gets everything moving. So you do have at least something more than others. So you can use that, at least some of it. You can sponsor these books. Let people take these books and be benefited. That's being organized here. I think you're involved in that, aren't you, Ram? You're involved in that. From this group, you're also doing that during December especially, the e-book distribution, it's called. Marathon, yeah. So that you can do. When you go back to India also, get a bunch of books, distribute them. Srila Prabhupada is very pleased with this book distribution. We know that satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasadaha. So Srila Prabhupada is very pleased with the distribution of these books. It's a very easy way to satisfy Srila Prabhupada. Of course, that doesn't mean we can distribute books and then go and eat meat and we also have to practice very seriously Krishna consciousness. But definitely Srila Prabhupada is pleased by the distribution of his books. He also wanted his disciples and followers to write more books. This, Krishna is unlimited, so glorification of Krishna is also unlimited. So, having said that, maybe something could be said about my... we have in Malayalam that one of my books is translated in that book, The Beginner's Guide to Krishna Consciousness. That's available here. And many other books also I've written. Srila Prabhupada said that his disciples should write more books than him, distribute, open more temples than him, and initiate more disciples than him. To fulfill any one of those orders seems to be very difficult. But we have to try, by his blessings. So, Hare Krishna, would you like to speak something, one of you? Something about the books. These books are supplements to Srila Prabhupada's books, definitely. Absolutely no way they should be considered substitutes, but they take up topics which Srila Prabhupada introduces systematically. For instance, that beginner's guide, Brahmacharya and Krishna Consciousness, on speaking strongly in Krishna Consciousness, which is about preaching techniques. So like this. Hare Krishna. Oh, before that, are there any questions? No. Okay. So, please take that.